back together again. You and I chatting it up Tuesday style, December 16th, 2025 on Connecticut Today. We welcome to the show Waterbury Mayor Paul Pinarevski to update the status of his city's current water system repairs and a timetable for that. Yankee Institute blogger Megan Portfolio dropped by to talk about a state-funded hospital takeover in Waterbury and how transparent that is or isn't. CBS News Washington reporter Linda Kenyon updated us on the current status of competing bills regarding health care and a possible extension of Obamacare subsidies. We also welcomed Bill McClay, the co-author of Jewish Roots of American Liberty, The Impact of Hebraic Ideas on the American Story. And finally, I offered a few of my thoughts on the town of Orange and the city of Waterbury moving forward on electronic law enforcement. We've been telling you over the past few days as to what's going on in Waterbury with some water problems. We understand things may be getting a little better. Joining us right now, Mayor Paul Pinarevski of Waterbury to give us an update with the very latest. Mayor, it's Paul here. Good afternoon. How are you?
I'm well. How are you today?
I'm good, Mayor. We're getting along. So update my listeners here. What do we have here? We know crews have been working. How do we stand?
So right now, we have been able to get an additional valve into the system, into the lines, so that we can start reintroducing water to the one section of the city that currently doesn't have water. Over the weekend, we were able to get water back to the basically the west side of the city and to the central part of the city, the area that runs mostly along the Naugatuck River through downtown, through a gravity-fed line. The problem with the east side of Waterbury was that if we fed water into that those lines, they basically were going to be coming out of the break that we had on Friday night. So we had to block that off. Yesterday, we were able to get a valve into there, inserted into there to shut the water off from going into that hole. And today, overnight and during the day today, we have been in a very controlled manner reintroducing water back into that system. It had been a couple of days without water in those pipes. The weather is very cold. And the concern with our water staff was that if we just fully reintroduced it at full pressure, that we could cause, you know, additional damage to some of the smaller lines, some of the feeds that go into the homes. So we spent the day getting water into the system to get it reacclimated. And at this moment, the crews are working to open the valve, another valve that had been shut off to stop the water from going this way, to allow the high-pressure main, the 30-inch main, that's been closed since Friday, to re-put water back into the system so that we can get water up to the east end into all of the homes. We think at this point we'll be able to reintroduce it and get it fully pressurized. So everyone in the city will have fully pressurized system, we're hoping, by tomorrow morning.
Okay, so that was my next question. So everybody, Mayor, should have some sort of water in a few hours by tomorrow morning, correct?
That's what we, you know, that's what we're aiming for at this point. I will say this system-wide issue where we've had, you know, so much of the system shut down is something we've never faced before. So, you know, we're going cautiously with it. But they tell me at this point that we're at the point is reintroducing this pressurized or the higher pressure water into the system should get it all up there, and that by tomorrow morning we should have enough pressure that everyone will we'll have full good pressurized water going forward. At that point, because the system lost water, we are under what's called a boil water advisory, because without water in the pipes, air gets introduced that can allow bacteria to grow potentially. So people are being advised to boil water that they would use for brushing their teeth or drinking or cooking, or they could use, you know, bottled water. Tomorrow morning, if the system is fully pressurized, we'll do some tests, send them out to the Department of Public Health, and within 24 hours, we should get the results back. You know, if the results come back negative for bacteria, we can lift the boil water order. If and I don't expect this to happen, but if they do come back showing that there is some bacteria, we would have to run a new set of tests and send them back out for another 24 hours.
And, Mayor, how does this affect currently the Waterbury school system? What are you and the Board of Ed looking at and education officials as to when that may be back to normal, or we know?
We're closed again tomorrow. The problem that we have, well, it's twofold at this point, has been that we have a number of schools that had no water at all, which is a problem. For some of those, it's not only that they have no water, but the older schools in the system still use steam heat. And a steam heat system that's that old requires infusions of water regularly from the system, which we couldn't supply. And then the last piece is we are 100% free lunches and breakfast here in the city. So all of our students can access breakfast and lunch. And at this point, with the boil water advisory in place, we can't prepare food with that water. Even if we boil it, commercial enterprises can't boil the water. They have to have good water to start with. So we couldn't serve them lunch or breakfast. At this point, we expect to get water back into the system tomorrow. If that's the case, the schools will have water for like toilets and things. We should be able to get the heat going in all of the schools. And then by Thursday, we do have an idea of some things we might be able to do to get them back into school for Thursday and Friday this week. But we'll see where we are tomorrow at this point.
You know, Mayor, a couple more things here. Number one, as a public servant and as people are involved in running cities and towns, big and small, there are really a magnification here, are there not, of infrastructure issues in cities? And how many cities and towns, Mayor, not just here in Connecticut, but all over the country, have these systems that are 60, 70, 80, 90, 100 years old, and I guess these things just happen.
Yeah, yes. As it, you know, the parts of the system here in Waterbury were put in back in the early 1900s. The industrialists, Waterbury, as you know, is a huge industrial town, mostly brass mills, heavily dependent on water. And the industrialists back then made some great decisions. We have a huge water system. We own 7 reservoirs that travel, miles to get here to Waterbury, and it's a great system. But those pipes, some of them were put in over 100 years ago. In fact, the pipe that initially started this started as a small leak in a 12-inch pipe with a valve problem, was put in 1905. In the process of trying to repair that valve, they jolted the pipe, because sometimes when you put pressure on these things, you get what's called like a water hammer effect. Mm-hmm. That caused the 12-inch pipe to break off from a 30-inch gravity-fed main, and that main ran parallel to a 36-inch pressurized pump-driven main that ran parallel to it. Within a very short period, the water that was leaking out of the 30-inch pipe was able to undermine the 36-inch pipe, took all the dirt and rocks out from under it, forcing that pipe to collapse. And that's what caused the problem. So it all started with a 120-year-old pipe. The big pipe that finally collapsed was put in the 1970s. But, as again, without the support underneath, it wasn't able to sustain itself.
And I guess, Mayor, finally, never underestimate or never take for granted just the ability to turn on a spigot and get a glass of water, huh?
No, that's true. This is, unfortunately, the second time we've had a huge issue. This is worse than the last time in the fall. One of the problems that we have as well is the age of the system. There's a number of valves that are located around through which we should be able to control the problem areas if we get a leak and just contain it into a smaller area. Most of those valves are so old that they don't work when we try to shut them down. And some number of years ago, because of they were aging, apparently people got it in their head that they shouldn't try to exercise them because they were afraid if they touch them at all, they might break them. And so we find now, as we go to try to localize or isolate a leak, the valves don't work, and we end up with this much larger problem where we're shutting it all down. So we were looking to start doing this in the next fiscal year as part of a capital project, but I'm going to sit down as soon as we get this stabilized with our finance people, with our water superintendent, and start looking to put a program in place. We've identified about 10 strategic valves that need to be completely replaced. We're just going to put brand new ones in, And with that happening, even if we get leaks, and we're going to get leaks, the system, I mean, we can't replace the entire system, anytime soon, probably in any of our lifetimes. We have over 400 miles of piping under the city streets. But we will be able to better localize the problem so that we don't have these widespread issues that we're having. And that should help alleviate it. So we're looking to get that started, as soon as we can next year, once we can get into, the construction, season where the weather's better and we can start working on these things.
Mayor Paul Penarewski of Waterbury. Mayor, thank you. We appreciate the time. Keep in touch and we'll check back in. We appreciate it, Mayor. Thank you.
Thank you.
Appreciate it. There you go. Mayor Paul Penarewski of Waterbury. All right. Hey, look who's here. Megan Portfolio. Yes, it's that time of the week, that time of a Tuesday. Check out what she does. Now, what she does is she watches uncountable hours of CTN. While you and I are watching football and game shows and streaming stuff, staying up to date with the latest streaming stuff, she has to sit there and listen to some blowhards from the General Assembly talk about stuff, and she reads bills as well. But that's why we love her. Ms. Portfolio, how are you?
Oh, good. Don't make it sound so burdensome. I love watching CTN.
Yeah, that's frightening, though. That's
I'm like, no, it's not a burden whatsoever, and I get paid for it.
Well, that's the whole thing, too. People understand you're our you know what you are? You're the Connecticut Today policy analyst. I'm going to give you that ceremonial title. How about that?
Oh, my God, my already job title is long enough.
All right. You are looking further into what we've talked to numerous people about, you and other legislators. The state is taking over some hospitals. Now, we need the hospitals. We need the bed capacity in the state. We just can't let these places close and turn them into condos because of natural disasters, pandemics, whatever. We need bed spaces. But, Megan, there seems to be details missing, stuff that's in the don't worry about it category about the actual deal and how much taxpayers are on the hook for here.
Oh, goodness. I'm starting to get this. Oh, don't worry about it fatigue.
Yeah.
From these lawmakers.
Yeah.
So just a real quick backstory. So Waterbury Hospital was owned by this California company, Prospect Medical Holdings, mm-hmm. who basically turned it into a dumpster fire. They went bankrupt. We had a November special session where all of a sudden this bill appeared authorizing UConn to get into, to purchase these hospitals.
Yeah.
No public hearing, all done in secrecy. Mm-hmm. A week after that, UConn had their bid in. The bid got accepted, so they won the bid. And the bankruptcy court has ruled that UConn can purchase the hospital for $13 million,
mm-hmm.
some of which is going to end up going to Waterbury, thankfully, because Prospect owes the city of Waterbury a ton of money in back taxes and in utility bills. So fortunately, some of that is going to go back to Waterbury. I'm sure they can use it, but not the rest of it. So it was rushed through special session, and then all of a sudden we had this auction. A bankruptcy deal is done. So the next step in the process is for UConn to fill out their certificate of need paperwork, which is basically required for anything done in like healthcare.
All right.
I'm being sarcastic, but if you want to change the wallpaper, you have to get a certificate of need. I mean, it's not that bad, but almost that bad. So in the certificate of need, in their paperwork, CT Insider did a great article on this, and this was about 800 pages of paperwork. They went through it, and they found that UConn is trying to keep certain information from the public. But in my opinion, if it's public money, I want public math. I want to see, the details. You're using my money. So what UConn is asking, they formally asked for certain documents to be sealed, and that's this cost and market impact review, which is something they have this up in Massachusetts. It has to be public, it's their law. And that's just – it just looks at any, these proposed mergers, how are these changes going to affect cost, the market, competition, patient access. But they also want to keep sealed some – economist reports, which reports out on the cost, quality, and access to healthcare. So right there, I'm already not happy because I'm fine with buying the hospital. I get it. I understand the situation. But it needs to be transparent because you're using, I'm going to run down the numbers, so get your calculator out.
Yeah, all right.
So here are the numbers, $13 million to purchase it.
Okay.
$195 million is going to be spent in the next 2 years for investment into the hospital. That could be staffing, infrastructure. Yeah. And then the cherry on top is $390 million is going to be bonded.
So we're putting
then at the end of the day, when you figure in the interest, that bond is going to cost about $500 million $500 million, $500 million.
So we're up to almost $750 million here.
Yeah, and you want to keep things secret? Okay. I don't think so.
But yet in Massachusetts, you say those sorts of documents.
I believe, don't quote me on the California thing, as I don't follow them as closely because I don't get their newspapers. But I believe it's last year, the year before Mass passed the law requiring that information to be public.
But in other words, this stuff that's they're trying to keep on the hush-hush, do we know, do you know, do any of the legislative members, do the committee people, somebody's got to be able to see this, right? Am I wrong?
I'm not sure. I know the Senate Republicans, Senator Gordon, Summers, and Harding, and I apologize if I left someone off of that, actually sent a letter to the Department of Health Services, asking them to not do this. So I don't know what the answer is, but they're at least I know at least the Senate Republicans are trying to get this information.
So, I did the math here. So it's $598 million without the interest that if we bond $390 million. So, we're looking at $750 million. And again, you and I agree here, Megan, we need the hospital capacity. We get it. But it's just, again, it's this sort of stuff that if you're going to do this, your arguments to do this should be good enough, right? To tell people, okay, this is a lot of money, but let's explain why.
And then they throw even more secrecy into it. And to be fair, I don't know if they know the answer yet. I know I don't know the answer. So Prospect owes the state of Connecticut like $200 million in taxes. We're going to forgive some of that. I don't know how much that is.
Yeah.
How much are we for? Is it $100 million? I mean, I don't know the answer to that, but that adds to the secrecy. If you don't know yet, at least let us know and let, I know CT Insider, I don't know who the reporter is over there, but they've been doing a fantastic job with covering this. If you don't want to let me know, let them know.
Yeah.
So we can be informed. I mean, and honestly, I worked in corporate for many, many, many decades, actually, and I've lived through like mergers and things like that. It's good to know the details up front, especially when you're dealing with healthcare and patients. Don't come to me like 3 years later and saying, because we've already started this with secrecy. So this is the pattern that we're in now. Don't come to me 3 years later and say, holy cow, we made a mistake. We need $1 trillion to bail this out. If you keep this out in the public and, let the committee members know, let the lawmakers be involved in this, we can actually make this be a somewhat successful nonprofit hospital, which the state could use.
So, and that was my next question. So this, when all is said and done, we know what's going to happen. It's just how much are people going to know as taxpayers. This will operate as a branch of UConn Health, right? Or am I wrong here?
It's not a government hospital. It's going to be like a nonprofit.
Okay.
Nonprofit hospital. So they're not, these won't be state, right this second today, they're not going to be state employees.
But who's going to, but UConn's going to run it, right? Is that what I understand?
Yes. Yeah, they're going to run it there. I think they're the majority share owner. So I don't know who else is going to have their hands in it.
Yeah. Oh, there's no
way. They're going to run it, but it's not going to be a government hospital.
Until CBAC gets their hands
in. Until CBAC starts knocking on the door and starts having their
and the governor goes, okay, I'm sorry. Are you and I both too jaded about this?
I'm too jaded. And
listen, I don't care.
I hope it's not going to be an I told you so situation because that would be devastating.
And
it would
listen,
be devastating for the community and for the state.
And listen, I'm joking here. We want whomever works there. We just want good care.
We want good care.
And again, from what you've told me and from what other people have told me, I mean, Waterbury Hospital. I mean, the building, the facility, it's not in good shape, from what I understand.
No, it's in terrible shape, and the infrastructure's in bad shape. The morale is in bad shape. I mean, hopefully, it's getting better.
Yeah,
my heart goes out to it. Yeah. I've worked in really toxic environments, and it's a nightmare. So my heart does go. I hope things do get better for them. But look, here's the deal: when someone's asking me for $500 million.
Yeah.
And tells me not to read the paperwork, this is starting to look like, you know, one of those emails from a Nigerian prince with, you know, coming from a CT.gov email address.
Wait a minute. Those emails are not real? Should I not have sent the account number? No, I'm just kidding. All right, folks, check it out. Go to YankeeInstitute.org. Megan Portfolio's latest piece. And again, this is good for the eventual rescue of Waterbury Hospital. It's been around for decades and decades, but it's got to be done the right way. Megan, thanks. How's the dog, by the way? How's Bruno doing?
Oh my God, he's killing me. It snowed over the weekend and I shoveled my grass so he'd have a nice spot to do his business. He didn't want to use that spot. So he's trampling through the snow, which then I had to wipe off, and then he made a mess of my house. But I still love him.
But you love him. All right, Megan, thanks. Be good. We'll chat next week. Thanks.
Bye.
Bye. Bruno, Megan's dog. Didn't want to use it. She shoveled the grass. Oh, my God. Shoveling grass for the pooch. God bless. A lot of you folks are probably wondering, where is this big grand agreement we're supposed to have on health care, on the Affordable Care Act subsidies, which are handled here in our state in Connecticut by Access Health CT? Finger pointing continues. Not a whole lot going on, I guess. We heard our next guest report on this earlier in the day. CBS News correspondent Linda Kenyon joins us again. Linda, good afternoon. Hope all is well with you. And are we back at the finger-pointing stage, Linda, regarding, or did we ever leave there? I heard your reports earlier today on this, but what are we looking at here with these Obamacare subsidies?
Well, sure. Of course, you know, finger pointing is one of the most favorite parts of being in elected office, it seems, regardless of party.
Yeah.
So, there will be a vote on a health care proposal tomorrow in the House of Representatives. However, it will not include extending those Affordable Care Act, also known as Obamacare, it will not include extending those subsidies. Speaker Mike Johnson held a press conference up on Capitol Hill, and he says they will not vote on that amendment. He said that that many Republicans did want to vote on that, but he said we looked for a way to try to allow for that pressure release valve, he called it.
Yeah.
And then he also said it was just not to be. So what does that mean for people who are worried about being able to afford their health insurance? What it means is the prices are going up. The House is voting on a bill, but it's not going to address that issue.
And finally, Linda, and this was the core issue, obviously, people remember, of this chaotic government shutdown we had weeks ago. And even that, I guess, I'm reading the other day, is looming again if there's not even some minor movement on health care here.
That's correct. And it's not just health care, but a number of federal agencies and departments were funded through what is called a continuing resolution, which continued the already existing funding levels. That was only through January. So that money might run out. And one of the reasons was that they said they needed more time, sort of a legislative kicking the can down the street sort of thing, and that they would have enough time to finish working on new fiscal numbers. By the way, the fiscal year started in October, so, you know, they're behind schedule, to put it mildly. And so if they don't come to an agreement on that, including health care, then there is another very real possibility of another government shutdown. And nobody wants that, but it could happen.
Linda Kenyon, CBS News in D.C. Linda, thank you, and we appreciate the time. Thanks, as always.
Absolutely.
Appreciate it. Love to talk to authors here. Stimulate the thought process. That's always good, I think. Our next guest is a professor of history at Hillsdale College. He holds the Victor Davis Hanson Chair of Classical History and Western Civilization. He's had some previous books as well, including The Masterless Self and Society in Modern America. For that, He won the 1995 Merle Curdy Award of the Organization of American Historians. Now, he has a new book out there that he has co-authored with Rabbi Stuart Halpin, and it is titled Jewish Roots of American Liberty, The Impact of Hebraic Ideas on the American Story. Bill McClay is the author, the co-author. Bill, it's Paul here at WICC. How are you, sir? Good evening.
Good to be with you.
And what? Why this book, Bill? You've got a great resume. I've been reading about this. Why this book? Why now? And just by the title, I'm sure it must drive some folks nuts that you did this. But why this book?
Well, I think it intrigues people more than it drives. I mean, I'm sure there are people,
yeah,
you know, who just don't like any kind of mentioned in the same breath of the two things. But no, I think most people are intrigued. What do you mean? And that's maybe we can cover a little bit,
yeah,
of that.
Yeah, sure,
in our time together.
Sure.
But what got this started, I'll just try to tell you quickly, but I had no idea that it was going to come out at a time such as the one we're living through,
yeah,
when
yeah.
anti-Semitism is on the march around the world, as we saw over the weekend in Australia and Netherlands and all over the world. And Halpern, my co-editor, is a professor and a administrator at Yeshiva University in New York, which is an Orthodox Jewish seminary. And I teach at Hillsdale. I'm a Christian, but I have a strong interest in Jewish matters, Jewish religion, Jewish practices, and so on, and Jewish Christian relations. And anyway, he interested me in coming to a series we organized together, a series of conferences about why Jewish teachers in Jewish day schools should teach American history, why it was important for them to teach that to their students. Because, as you may know, I mean, a lot of religious schools in general don't, Christian schools as well, they don't place as strong an emphasis on American history as part of their. But this is especially true, apparently, in Jewish day schools. I hadn't known. And so I gave these talks about why it was really important for Jewish teachers and their Jewish students to understand what a special place for the Jews America has been, and the heritage of that, our commitment to religious liberty and to in all of its facets, and going back to going back to colonial times, but going back to the very earliest days of the United States of America as under the Constitution. George Washington, some of your listeners may know about this, but a lot of Americans don't. That George Washington in 1790 wrote a letter to the Hebrew congregation in Newport, Rhode Island, and it's a beautiful statement of how I'm just going to paraphrase it. No longer do we speak of mere toleration of those who are not of the main majority religion. He says that to worship as we please, guided by conscience, is our natural right. And so we don't have toleration is no longer spoken of, and this is a government that gives no sanction to bigotry, no assistance to persecution, and so it really was very well received in this congregation, and it became known all through the country. And actually, Washington wrote several letters, which we've also included in the book.
Interesting.
To other Hebrew congregations. So there's a strong commitment to religious liberty in general, but particularly to the protection of worship by the Jews, who had been historically so persecuted and denied citizenship and all sorts of things in their European and other Russian and Asian settings. So it's something I think Americans could be very proud of, is that from the very beginning we recognized a sort of special place for Jewish people. And this really does go back to our Christian heritage, that there is, you know, Pope John Paul II referred to the Jews as our elder brothers in the faith. And not all Christians see it that way, of course.
No. And you talk about, Bill, finally, you talk about the subtitle here is the impact of Hebraic ideas on the American story. Give us another idea in the American story that you highlight here with Hebraic roots here.
Well, it's a big one. You know, we think of the Declaration of Independence as a sort of our most foundational document, even deeper than the Constitution.
Mm-hmm.
And the part of the Declaration that where, you know, Jefferson wrote it, and for the most part, it's a self-evident truth that all men are created equal, endowed by their Creator with certain unalienable rights, life, liberty, and the pursuit of happiness. Yeah, everybody knows that, or at least they should know it. Well, you know, the question arises, all men are created equal. Where does that come from? What's the grounding of that?
Yeah.
Well, the grounding of that is in the book of Genesis, in basically the most fundamental, one of the most fundamental assertions of the Jewish faith, that God created man in his God's image, that we bear the image of God. And that is the source of our dignity, of our rights, of our equality, in that we all bear the divine image, even if we're unequal in other ways, as we all are. You know, it's not an effort to deny that. It's an effort to say that there's some, in a deeper way, our souls are formed in the image of God, and the formation that takes is in part our freedom, that we are free, and actually God has made us free even to sin, to disobey him, as we did, you know, right off the bat in the story of Garden of Eden. So, but that is, in a perverse way, you could say that's evidence of the divine image in us, that we have that freedom. Anyway, the notion of equality that comes in the Declaration of Independence that we see as fundamental, that there's not, as Jefferson said in one of his letters, there's not a race of men who are born with saddles on their back and others with boots and spurs to ride them. You know, there's no inherent hierarchy. We are all fundamentally equal. But that comes ultimately from a biblical source.
Interesting.
And it is it's not from the New Testament. It's from the old, what Christians call the Old Testament.
Even I know that. Folks, it's as our guest has pointed out, a very important book, especially for these times. We thank Bill McClay, co-author with Rabbi Stuart Halpern, Jewish Roots of American Liberty, The Impact of Hebraic Ideas on the American Story. Bill, we thank you for the time. We appreciate it. Good luck.
I appreciate it.
Good luck with the book. So much, Bill. Thank you.
Thank you. Bye-bye.
Appreciate it. All right, be sure you stay with us right here at WICC 600 AM and 95.9 FM all afternoon. We will be updating the situation in Waterbury, still with a lack of potable water. But Waterbury's Mayor Paul Penderevsky is going to join us coming up after the news at the bottom of the hour at 4:30. So the Mayor of Waterbury, Mayor Penderevsky, is going to join us toward the end of the day today, around 4:30 or so. So I arranged it for that time, so he will give us an update as to task at hand of repairing a couple of breaks in the system. And as you just heard from Chris Williams there, making sure the water, if they do reopen the schools tomorrow, which we don't know, maybe, we'll see what happens, got to make sure the water is potable. That means drinkable. That means proper for human consumption. So there's water and there's potable water. So when they get the water back and repaired, they have to make sure that they, you know, like you and I do at home, We know nobody takes the first drip of water out of the faucet after having a glass of water. You run the thing for a little bit. Water has a wonderful way of cleaning out pipes if you just run it a little bit and let nature progress. So Mayor Panarevsky is going to join us coming up this afternoon. All right, busy, busy show today, but I wanted to start with this. And again, this is not so much, and I told you so it may be, but I think I was wrong here on this one. And you and I have debated and talked about this over and over and over and over and over again for the past a couple of years, the idea, and I have no problem with these. I don't, because my life is exceedingly boring. And the government is going to look at my information and say, what a snooze life this guy lives. And we're talking about speed cameras. And it now turns out, now remember I said probably within 5 or 10 years, I said 10 years at the outer limit, maybe five, that every city or town will have at least one of these, and most of them are going to be put up at busy commercial intersections where people act like morons and a-holes and around the schools as well. Remember I said maybe 10 years, maybe 5 years? I might be wrong. It might be 3 or 4 years or 2 years from now. Why? Well, how about this? Apparently, two more municipalities are taking steps to go with red light cameras, speed cameras. Yes, red light cameras, all that sort of stuff. One, apparently, is the town of Orange. Do you see this? First selectmen in Orange, okay, speed and red light cameras after an outpouring of support from residents. Yes. People want these things. I know a lot of people say, well, you know, I don't want my information out there, and nobody really wants these things. This is Big Brother. No, no, people want these things because they, like me, are disgusted with the morons who can't observe even 10 miles above a speed limit or who don't know what the freaking brake pedal is for. Town officials in the town of Orange have voted unanimously to create a law permitting speed and red light cameras. An issue that one selectman said has engaged the public disproportionately. Quote, I haven't seen this many emails on a topic in a long time, said Selectman Mitch Goldblatt. First Selectman Jim Zioli mentioning the board had gotten a bunch of letters from people, most of which were in favor of the ordinance. That was food for thought, says here in Hearst. The ordinance follows a big trend of other area cities and towns adopting similar laws. New Haven, West Haven, Hamden, Milford. Laws like the one okayed in Orange last week, this happened middle of the week last week, Hearst says, allow for the use of automated traffic enforcement devices automatically triggered by vehicles traveling 10 miles an hour or more above the posted speed limit. So you've got a 9-mile-an-hour cushion. Or running a red light, not a good idea. So everybody knows what these things are for. Do not run a red light. You can scoot under it if it's yellow. You don't run a red light, but even the town of Orange decided last week, hey, it's enough. Now, again, they've got to go through the process of shaking this out. They have to come up with a plan. Again, you don't just flip the switch and turn these things on. You've got to have an initial approval. Then the city or town has to get together with police, figure out where you want them, what commercial zones, what school zones, and all that. And then all of that has to be submitted to the DOT. The ordinance says was approved here. The town still has a multi-stage process ahead before the cameras can be installed. Now, again, some people like it, some people don't. Okay, so not just Orange. Also in the news, because of their water problems, yes, now, along with Orange, Here comes the city of Waterbury. This story in Hearst. Waterbury wants to install 10 red light cameras to improve traffic safety. City officials in Waterbury saying here the Board of Aldermen is set to vote this coming Monday on hiring a vendor, a company to provide this stuff. They will vote, I guess, this coming Monday, which would be, what, the 22nd, on installing and monitoring 10 red light cameras in hopes of catching and fining runners and creepers. Now, a creeper is somebody who doesn't come to a full stop. It's easy to do. See, when you depress your foot on the brake pedal, the car will eventually come, or the RV, or whatever you're riding, a motorcycle. The vehicle you are in will eventually come to a full stop. You will feel the vehicle come to a full stop. And yes, I got a ticket a long time ago. I think it was the last ticket I got. I got a ticket for rolling through a stop sign literally at 2:30 in the morning. Yes, the cop was there waiting for a stunod like me to do it. But you know what? He was right. He said, sir, you didn't come to a full stop. I said, yeah, I, whatever, $90 later, there you go. All right. Hope I paid for something in the town of Wallingford. So apparently in Orange, it's going to be speed cameras and red light cameras. In Waterbury, it's just going to be red light cameras. And I don't blame them whatsoever. How many times do you see people just blowing through stop signs, blowing through red lights? I used to not want these things. Now I want them. Having almost gotten T-boned several times, and I only did it because I stopped. I said, let me look. I have the green. And sure enough, here comes somebody driving Cavone 1, and they just blew right past me. Waterbury City and police officials says here in Hearst looked at cities of similar sizes in Connecticut and in New York where the system is being used effectively and issued a request for proposals from eligible vendors. Police Chief Fernando Spagnolo said red light and speeding violations are particularly prevalent along East Main Street and the Chase Avenue corridors. This isn't hard, folks. I know you're going to say, oh, it's Big Brother. Oh, I don't know if I want this. Well, if you come to a stop and you do not move for a moment, see, that's known as a stop. If you do that and then proceed, chances are you won't get a violation in the mail. But back to my original point, folks, this is fast and furious. This is coming like crazy here. Now, anybody have a problem with this? Stop sign cameras and red light cameras in Waterbury? Anybody have a problem with the great town of Orange going with their choice here, I guess, which happens to be speed cameras and red light cameras? Why do you have a problem with this? I don't. I might get caught if these ever come to Wallingford. Guess what? I'll learn. I'm sorry, there are just too many morons out there. You got to start hitting them in the pocketbook. You disagree with me or not? So the question today as we begin, right here, and people are already tagging up here, at least two more Connecticut municipalities seem ready to move ahead with speed cameras and red light cameras. Will every Connecticut city or town eventually have them? What do you think? I think yes, and I think it's going to happen sooner than later. You got a problem with this? I don't. Even if I got pinched once or twice, I'll learn. Trust me. You like this or not? 203-333-9422-333-WICC. So it apparently is going to be in the town of Orange and in the city of Waterbury. Here comes more electronic monitoring. I have no problem with this. Zero. I don't care. What if they sell your information, Paul? Sell it to who for what? Hey, did you know that he took a ride at this stop sign on May 23rd, 2025? So what? But apparently, according to a couple of stories in Hearst, the city of Waterbury is looking at several situations and locations to put up either red light and or stop sign cameras because they have a problem, they say. And the town of Orange is looking, and apparently officials in Orange say a lot of people want these things. And again, it's a multi-step process here, so there's no mayor, there's no first selectman or first select woman or first select person or chief of police or police commission that can just simply put their imprimatur on it and have it happen here. These are multifaceted decisions that I guess are becoming more and more popular. You know what? Instead of a lot of people complaining about this, why don't they ask the question, why do so many people want this? See, you can be inherently against something, but then understand why maybe some people want it, right? I mean, on another level, for example, you can look at, well, you know, you don't like people owning guns, or you don't like people smoking or using or ingesting or imbibing anything that has to do with, you know, adult recreational marijuana use. But our laws still allow it, right? So I'm sure there are people furious that, you know, they may get pinched for rolling through a stop sign or creeping through a red light. Well, then just don't do it. See, people like you and I both grew up with, you know, the one thing you respected or were taught to respect on the road or on the roads were what? Stop signs. Well, basically three things we're having trouble with now. The speed limits, stop signs and red lights, and school buses. And, you know, we're getting now deluge with a lot of this electronic stuff because that innate or, you know, inbound respect for those things, again, traffic lights, stop signs, school buses, other things like that, just, it's not there anymore. Seriously, go on the Post Road in Orange and Milford any time of the day or night and looking at, and I'll admit, there have been a time or two where I've try to beat a light and it turns red and there's no way I'm stopping. And saying to myself when I got through there, geez, what are you doing? Relax. But it's now to the point where it is so prevalent and so disturbing that I'm telling you, I think I was wrong here. I said a little while ago, 5 years, maybe 10 years, every city or town will have the stop sign cameras, the red light cameras, the school bus license plate readers, the speed cameras. I think it'll be quicker. I think it's 3 to 4 years. I think it's in every city, every town in the state within 3 or 4 years. What do you think? And does it bother you? I don't care. That's just me. Do I drive faster than I should sometimes? Yes. Do I forget to use my turn signal, do a dangerous lane change sometimes when I'm tired, not paying attention? Yes, we all do. But is this just something now, the coming, you know, the coming generations of drivers are just going to have to get used to? You tell me, does it bother you or not? Two hands on the wheel, do you come to a full stop? Yes, I have taught myself, come to a full stop, even if it's just a fraction of a second or two. I'll get there, everybody calm down.